This is Unfiltered Vitamin Z, being brought to you by Zaid. Special guest in the building at Cigars on the Boulevard with
my Charlie.
We have, what are we drinking, beer?
I'm drinking Wurstheimer beer.
Irish whiskey and Coke. I don't always drink, but when I drink, it's what folks like Charlie.
And appreciate that.
Let's talk about what we smoking. Go ahead.
So I'm smoking the Banker by H. Hutman. It's a very medium to full body cigar. Not much spice to it, which is a lot of people don't like spice, so it's a great cigar for that. But it's got great, very smooth smoke all day long and consistent taste, consistent burn.
I'm smoking the Superfly by Oscar Valladares. I never tried the other ones. Because this company makes a few, but I've only tried the Superfly.
They make the Leaf by Oscar.
Yep.
They make a series of Leaf by Oscars. That's their most popular brands. It's a great go-to. It is a great, and we were just talking before the video about go-to cigars. It's a great go-to cigar also. I highly recommend it to anyone who's in there who's looking for smoking something. This also comes wrapped in a leaf usually, the Leaf by Oscars do. So it's like opening a little present.
True. I had one as a gift actually, and I didn't know what it was.
Did you light the leaf?
I left it in the car for like a while.
Oh.
Now go lie. It was given out like this like car auction thing. It was like a little event. And I remember just like, oh, is this a cigar? And then I just like was in a hurry and left it in the car. But I realized later when I saw him here, I was like, oh shit, that's what it was. It was the Leaf by Oscar.
Yeah.
But anyway, what is a beginner cigar that you would recommend?
A beginner cigar, I always recommend our house blends. Probably the Connecticut house blend and a Robusto size. The reason being I recommend those is because it's great mild smoke. It's not overpowering into it. It's very smooth. It's very creamy. Anybody who's smoking would like it a lot, especially for the first time.
Talk to me about your first cigar. You remember your first cigar?
It's probably in Iraq.
So it wasn't when you was in Tennessee?
No, it wasn't when I was in Tennessee. I wasn't a cigar smoker in Tennessee. My brother was a big cigar smoker, and he sent me some over to Iraq. And he had already been done one tour, and he's like, hey, man, you'll like these. And I was like, all right. So I tried one, and I've been hooked ever since.
Do you remember what it was?
It was done by it was a house blend from, what's it called, Cuban Paradise.
Okay.
Here in Florida at the, what's it called? I think this is what it was. At the John's Pass.
That's the name of the lounge?
No, John's Pass is the location. The lounge
okay.
is Cuban.
Okay, okay. I got you. And then, was he constantly sending you more cigars back while you were over there?
No, he's cheap.
One and done.
He's a one and done kind of guy. Romeo and Juliet is smoked over there a little bit. They might have been knockoffs, who knows, but they weren't bad. I also didn't know cigars that well back then.
Okay, but nowadays, now that you've had years of experience smoking cigars, what are your personal top three, if you could?
Top three, Esteban Carrera brand. I don't have a specific one in there, maybe the Chupacabra. But the Esteban Carrera brand is a great brand all day long. Love them. Love Leaf by Oscar. Great brand right there. Love my house blends. Perdomo is a great brand. I'm going to keep going. Sorry.
So you don't have a top three, but you got several.
I got several that I like going to.
So you just mentioned that when you were overseas in Iraq and you smoked your first cigar, talk to me a little bit about, one, what branch military, what you did in the military, and what you specifically did overseas.
I was an engineer officer in the United States Army. I advised the Iraqi Army for three tours. And it'd been engineer operations for two of them and military intelligence operations for my third one. What that meant was I was just teaching them how to build roads, do route clearance, which means they're finding IEDs, improvised explosive devices on the side of the roads, basically trying to keep the maneuver element, which is the infantry, safe.
So let's break that down a little bit. When you were talking about the roads and the bombs, those are the bombs that are like undetonated.
Exactly.
That might have dropped and not have gone off.
No. These are ones that they built out of homemade explosives like ammonia. I'm not going to get into how to build a bomb here, but basically fertilizer.
I'm already
ammonia.
On that.
Yeah, already, I am too. So we're going to red flag this thing a little bit. So basically they take some ingredients, put it together, build a bomb, and that's what they're trying to kill us with over there. I'm not going to get into the different type of charges or anything like that.
Specific.
Get arrested really quick.
You're one of the few people I've met that have been in the military. You retired, correct?
I medically retired out.
What did you retire as?
I retired as a major.
And what are the highest ranks? So I know major's up there.
So major is right in the middle, so to speak. So after that is lieutenant colonel and colonel on the field grade side. And then below that is captain, first lieutenant, second lieutenant. So I'm like right smack in the middle. And then you get into your general officers, which is political positions at that point.
Gotcha. And then after captain is what? how far until you get to general?
Then it goes captain, it goes second lieutenant, major, lieutenant colonel, general, or brigadier general, major general, lieutenant general, and then general.
So what are the differences? I've only seen this in movies, but tell me in real life, is there such a thing as like a one-star general?
Yes.
Two-star, okay.
One-star general is brigadier general. Two-star general is major general. Three-star general is lieutenant general. And four-star general is general.
Okay. So no five-star general, the highest.
We had the last five-star general was Eisenhower during World War II.
Hmm.
And he was the Allied Supreme Commander is what his title was.
Okay. So let's go back to Iraq then.
Right.
How long were you there?
I did a 10-month tour, a 12-month tour, 6 months in Iraq and 6 months in Kuwait.
Okay. And what years was this?
05, 06, 08, 09, 2010 for Iraq, and then it melted in 2011 in Kuwait.
Okay. And what are something you weren't really aware of or sure of before, but you came out knowing?
Customs and courtesies. Some basic things like don't show the bottoms of your feet to an Iraqi is very rude. Like when you cross your legs, don't cross them in a way that your bottoms of your feet are showing towards them. Make
right.
sure you cross your leg where the base of your foot's facing away. The we called it the man kiss, where you kiss the cheeks, both cheeks. There's someone that you're very close to. I had a couple of Iraqi counterparts that I got very close to, and we would greet each other that way. And you'd be surprised the young soldiers look at you like, what was that?
Yeah.
Because they're very...
And it's interesting because we're homophobic in the Middle East. Like, I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
Like, it's very...
Dude, y'all, Muslim, in the Muslim faith, it's you throw them off the top of a building.
It's
straight up. Am I wrong?
It's not practiced everywhere.
I didn't say it was practiced. I said it's in the Quran.
But, no, it's not in the Quran.
It's not in the Quran?
No. Some people do it.
Oh, that's what that's
saying. Yeah.
Okay, my understanding is in the Quran. Thank you for
No.
That. It's good to know.
As far as I know, there is nothing specific. I've never come across that where it says drop them off the building. But it is very clear that there is only one way to have kids.
Right. Yeah, that's genetics.
It's not even religion. No. It's not religion for that. But it is interesting to see that how some people might see that as awkward, yet we are a culture that's very... like unapologetically masculine, number one, but number two, also very pro men and women being together, but yet we don't mind two men kissing on the cheek. That's not seen as weird for us. You know what I mean?
No. We're
confident in our sexuality and our masculinity that it's okay. That's the homie.
I held hands with my counterpart.
Yeah.
We were walking down the street, walking down the street or whatever, and we're holding hands. That's just the culture.
In Africa too?
In Africa, yeah. I was in Burkina Faso, Africa, for 30 days, 2 years after they had a coup. That was fun.
Interesting. So are there any other places that you've traveled to because of the military?
Just stateside.
Okay.
Nothing big.
We'll come back to the Iraq thing. You're one of the few people, I don't know if I said this earlier just now, but you're one of the few that I know that joined the military because you wanted to serve your country.
Exactly.
There's a lot of
That's
young
That's all
folks.
I wanted to do. Didn't take a bonus, got my GI Bill, wanted to serve my country.
Because I feel like that idea of patriotism in most countries is almost gone. You don't really meet people. And I met people that joined the military, but a lot of them were just young, really weren't sure what to do. They weren't really smart enough to go to college. They kind of just wanted to blow things up and have some action, have some fun.
That was me.
I mean, it's a perk, is it not?
It's a huge perk. I blew a lot of stuff up. I've got probably 10,000 pounds of explosives underneath my belt.
Well, I'm a sense of that. Okay. So, is it not a thing for boys, even when they become men, the toys we play with just get bigger. You know what I mean?
That's it.
We used to have the BB guns and laser tag and whatnot. Then it become real bullets and real explosives.
Good. Yeah.
So, again, one of the few being that you wanted to serve.
Yeah.
And that was something that you had instilled from you from childhood, or did it come later? Was it because of family?
So, it's multiple things. One, I love this country. That's the number one thing. I even got a tattoo to my arm, We the People, get the American flag on there, that kind of thing.
It does look good on camera.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, it looks better in person.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. But I'm a second-generation airborne engineer officer. I'm very proud of that. In my family, you have to be airborne if you're a male, and or in the Army if you're sending the buttons. My daughter wants to be in the Army. We're going to make sure she's contracted airborne. She already says she wants to be airborne. She's 8 years old. And already knows the airborne songs.
There you go.
So that's part of my family. My brother's an airborne infantryman. My father's an airborne engineer. I'm an airborne engineer.
So the folks at home, what does it mean?
We jump out of planes.
I mean, it's almost implied, but just certain people might not be aware with certain things in the military.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And so you said second generation.
Yep.
And would you have an issue in the future if your son or their kids don't want to join?
No, not whatsoever. My daughters, I have two daughters and a stepson. My stepson says he wants to be a surgeon when he gets older, but he's looking at the path of becoming an Air Force PJ, a parajumper, which is the medics for the Air Force.
Right.
They basically go out and they go with the Special Forces guys, and they're being anything medical. They will literally take your sleeve of your body. They will grab your soul, put it back into your body, then patch you up.
That's a wild way of putting it.
It's wild, but
you don't have to look at the camera the whole time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can look at me like it's a
conversation.
Yeah, man, you're good. You're good. So the airborne, number one, we talked about you could be a paramedic and it'd be airborne too.
Yeah.
For certain people that have negative perceptions of American government as a whole, mm-hmm. but American military number two, what is something that you've seen people done or you've seen benefits of the American military that give it a reason to continue to exist? Because some people are like, no, we shouldn't send so much money to our military and whatnot. What are some positive things that you think people would benefit from knowing about the military or your personal experience?
So with the military, you got to understand, we are the largest military in the world, hands down.
Right.
The reason we invest so much money into our military is we are a mess around and find out kind of group.
Right. It's gangsters.
It is.
American government.
Everybody wants to be a gangster until it's time to do gangster shit.
Mm-hmm.
But we've put so much money into it to keep people from coming into our soil. We had two major attacks on our country.
Mm.
And since the Revolutionary War ended, there's only been two major attacks on our country by other countries. 9/11 and Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Other than those two, everybody's been scared to mess with us. And those people have paid dearly for messing with us.
So I think one of the key things I personally have noticed, so historically in the U.S., when they talk about like the friendly culture, even in the West,
mm-hmm.
back in those days, everybody had guns like on the hips. You know what I mean? Remember the duels?
Oh, yeah.
In the Western movies and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing about it is you got to look at a gun as a tool.
Yeah.
Guns, let's see how to say this. Guns create a polite society. If everybody thinks they're going to get shot by somebody, they're more likely to be polite and talk True. Through it than they are to go, oh, let's take this outside.
Right.
Use the words rather than want to mess with somebody that has a gun on. All day long.
I noticed that when I was in Europe, that a lot of people were super rude and super mean. It could be super racist. Granted, there is that here. You just can't do it. You just can't say
it. No, you don't even say it because you don't know who's carrying.
Exactly. So that's one of the things, like you said, brings about that polite culture. But number two, when you're going back to the violent issue, violence is something that I feel like maybe some people have tried to erase or act like it's not a part of society. At the end of the day, if you say this is white and I say it's black, but I blow you up and you no longer exist, it's whatever color I say it is.
Pretty much.
Your opinion doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, we can argue about it. We can decide what is this equal? What is this? 2 + 2 = 4, 2 + 2 = 5, whatever.
But yeah.
I say something, you say something, we go back and forth. Eventually, one person topples the other and he gets to say whatever he wants it to be.
So I believe that General Mad Dog Mattis said it best. When he was defense for the United States, for our country, the United States. And he said, be polite, be professional, have a plan to kill everyone you meet.
Interesting.
He was always about being polite and being professional first. But if need be, he was very much prepared to escalate.
Right. I think it's an underrated, sorry, go ahead.
But
I was going to say it's an underrated obligation as men.
It is. That's it, exactly. Masculinity.
You do have to be a gentleman.
Masculinity,
but you got to be ready to whack.
Undercut in our country right now.
Yeah.
It's being said that we should be less misogynist.
Yeah.
Which when people are, there's meaning.
It's real easy to be considered misogynist. All I got to say is make me a plate of food, and all of a sudden I'm a misogynist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you're just asking. You don't even have to say make it. Say, hey.
I'm asking, please.
Please.
Make me a sandwich.
You're misogynist. Why? Because I'm one? No, because you're up.
Because you're my woman.
And even though with my girlfriend, who's going to be my fiance, I'm asking her on Friday. She's not watching this podcast, so I can say that.
Oh, shit. We'll release this after.
Yeah, whatever. Either way. I'm asking her on Friday, and she makes me lunches all the time. Not because she has to, not because she's obligated or I'm oppressed, or because I can't do it myself, because she feels that's a way of showing love to me.
Right.
And that's what it is. It has nothing to do with the male and female roles, but she takes on that role because she loves me. Just like I take on the role of protector to her and her son,
my stepson, because that is my job as the man.
Right.
I don't let anyone mess with them. And if they do,
fuck around, I die.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I lose, I go down fighting all day long. That is my job as a protector of the family.
Going back to violence, for those that think it's an unnecessary component or doesn't exist in our society, you take, let's say, a woman that lives alone that says, I don't need a man to protect me.
Okay.
Violence is still there because, God forbid, something happened and she calls the cops. You are outsourcing violence.
You are outsourcing.
Even if you're a grown man who thinks that violence is unnecessary and whatnot, yep. Something does happen, you call the cops. You just have someone else do the violence for you, someone else to bring a gun for you.
Exactly.
The only difference is you got to wait 30 minutes for them to show up if they show up on time.
Exactly.
While you're having the issue.
Exactly. And that's the thing.
Still violent.
You, for the women out there, I would love to have a woman on this cast right now just to get her opinion. That would be but I've heard I've watched numerous women that say they don't need men anymore, especially in minority societies that say they don't need a man. Well, who are you? What percentages? Let's go through percentages right now.
Before you continue, I'm just going to stop this and re-hit it. It just makes it easy when I want to transfer a file that it's not one big. Go ahead.
Let's go through jobs. Construction worker, 90% men.
Yep.
Police officers, I think it was 75% men.
Okay.
Military, 99% male. All these,
important jobs.
All important jobs. Male dominated. We're not saying, I'm not saying for a second a woman can't pick up a rifle and hang with
right.
all day long on the field of battle. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the majority are not female.
And for a reason. It's not because of specific norms we've established in society. Those norms exist because of biology. What beautiful woman who's feminine wants to pick up a rifle and kill people? It's not common.
No.
It's not normal.
Ronda Rousey is a one-off. She's a one-off all day long. She can beat my tail all day long.
But that's not the norm.
That's not the norm. That's the minority, not the majority.
Now, granted, there are certain jobs, there's a lot of jobs I prefer women to have. For example,
bartender.
Facts.
That's how I make my money here.
In Brazil, in like the nice neighborhood, one of the more expensive neighborhoods, because most of it is shitty, by the beach, the only main cigar lounge with Cubans and all types of nice restaurant. I had an octopus there and everything.
Ooh, that sounds good.
All dudes working there.
Really?
And I said, we are 5 blocks away from a beach with some of the most beautiful women that exist on the planet. And you can't get 2 of them to work in here? Why the hell am I smoking cigars, eating food, and not seeing big booties? Like, how the hell am I in the country designed for this? And it's all dudes in uniform wearing hats. The one chick that did come in to buy cigars for her husband, the whole bar stopped.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, y'all could triple what you make in an hour.
Oh, easily.
With a few nice chicks. And I don't get why. And I thought maybe because... Here's the thing. Most of the people in there weren't tourists. Most of them were just like upper class people from Rio chilling there, having a smoke, having a coffee. I'm like, so why is there not women here? Daycares, for example, would you drop your son off all male daycare?
Oh, hell no.
That's weird, right?
No.
That's weird.
Not at all.
That's weird.
I would not. Now, one guy working there, got it. He's good with kids. He's a one-off.
One-off.
That one-off we're talking about.
All male daycare?
No, not at all.
They're all 6'4", 220 pounds?
Oh, no.
Because here's the thing. Some people might say, well, those are just norms because some guys are better with the kids than some women are.
Once again, you said some.
Some.
You didn't say all.
And here's the thing. At the end of the day, a man that chooses to work at a daycare, he is different than the man that chooses to work in construction or go into the military.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that the same type of archetype character, the same masculine dude that wants to work in construction in the military, is the same dude that wants to work in the daycare.
No.
That's going to be a different dude.
And we're not talking about sexuality in any means of this. Yep. We're talking about just the way they're wired.
Dental hygienist. I don't want male dental hygienist.
And you know, that's the one that I would say that could go either way. That's just my opinion.
It could, but who do you want with your mouth open, sticking tubes inside, saying open wide?
Honestly, because it is a medical procedure, I wouldn't care either way.
Okay.
That's me.
Got you.
Because it's medical.
Right, right, right. You're like
in the medical field.
Being professional.
Yeah. And I'm being serious. Now, who do I prefer serving me my beer all day long? Female.
Yeah.
Just because. Now, do I want to sit down and turn away a beer from a guy? No, it's still my beer.
There's a lot of times I've been in offices, school, for example, talking to counselors. I've always preferred talking to female counselors than male counselors on campus. Anytime I have to deal with...
I disagree.
What?
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah, because I feel like the male understands where I'm coming from better.
In a long-term context, yes. But in the context, sorry, let me give some context to this. For me, especially when I was a new kid, constantly moving around different schools, who was generally more empathetic?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
So when I got to college, I kind of expected, I enjoyed having a female counselor as well. Or anytime I got to do anything office or administration related, I prefer talking to a woman.
So my
because I got used to that.
My mental flip on that was when I hit college.
Yeah.
All the way through elementary school, high school, things like that, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. I feel like they should more empathy, things like that. I didn't give it two craps about empathy
in college.
I was geared for the military. I was taking ROTC.
Right. Different. You're going to do a different career path, too, generally speaking.
Yeah, generally speaking.
Yeah, you're going to have more male advisors in that area than female. But you know what's interesting? If you look at, say, for example, the homeless population, for example.
Yes.
It's majority male.
Is it?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I have not looked that statistic up.
But if you just think about it, your whole life coming across homeless people, one majority of them male? Or do you think split?
Often, I think it's split, actually.
How often do you come across a homeless female?
I've seen quite a few in Ruston. Now, I don't go to the big cities long on purpose, but I've seen quite a few female that are homeless. And I don't know if that's just a recent flip or if that's a norm.
Well, here's the thing that I've always said, and this is going to sound horrible, but generally speaking, even difficult women still find somebody.
Yes, you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, for a new, because women, children, and dogs are loved unconditionally.
Correct.
Men are loved unconditionally. Yeah. On some condition.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? So for me, to see a homeless woman, I know you got to be an extra type of bitch for nobody to want to take care of you. Not a single person.
Yeah.
Nobody. Because for dudes, it's understandable. Certain things happen, but boom, next thing you know, you're on drugs, nobody likes you, nobody cares about you, boom, you're homeless.
Yeah.
But for a woman, it's like, interesting. How bad did it get for you? How bad were you of a person? Because here's the thing. There are fat, ugly women that men will crawl on glass for. There's no fat, ugly dudes that there's women crawling on glass for.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
But so with that's that why I said, women have to bring something to the table too. Mm-hmm. They can't just be pampered their entire lives.
Sometimes they get lucky.
Yeah.
Because how do I say this delicately?
Don't say it delicately. Just say it.
Fuck it. Dick is free for most women.
Absolutely.
But the opposite don't work for men.
Nope, not at all.
So in terms of what is to be brought to the table, well, most women are sitting on a scholarship without even realizing it.
Yeah.
So we're kind of simple creatures, right? Mm-hmm. You get a lady that's polite, that's friendly, that's good with kids, that, you know, brings you a beer and a sandwich, and boom, we have. It really doesn't take much.
I don't even care about the sandwich. You bring me a beer, I'm freaking, you have me for life.
See, you don't even take much.
Don't bring me, crack open that beer for me, and I'm done.
You ask a woman what she wants in a man, and that list will go on and on, and it's extensive.
Yeah.
That's why you see men in cigar bars, cigar lounges. Because at the end of the day, sometimes you see a man extremely happy or extremely sad, and a lot of times the issue for both is a woman behind both emotions.
You're right.
Let's go back. So your accent, obviously, you're from Tennessee.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, you were born there.
I know, I was born in Dallas, Texas, but I grew up in Tennessee.
Okay, how old were you when you moved to Tennessee?
4 or 5.
Okay.
So I grew up there, yeah.
Got you. So talk to me about where you grew up in Tennessee. What was life like growing up there?
I grew up in Jackson, Tennessee, predominantly a white and black society. Not many Hispanics at all, even though I'm half Puerto Rican, I don't speak Spanish. And the reason for that is, if I'd grown up in Florida, I guarantee you I'd be speaking Spanish. Necessity. That's what it came down to. I did not have the need to learn Spanish.
Right.
So that was that. Tennessee was great. My grandmother was a debutante. She was homecoming queen for her college. She was a secretary to the president of the college. She was the president of her sorority. She was a Southern belle, so to speak. So I was raised by a Southern belle a lot of the times.
So did you have supper instead of dinner?
Oh, yes.
Interesting. I always wanted to have supper, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
See if it tastes better. Yeah. And then how many siblings you have?
I have one brother and a half brother, and that's it.
And how long ago did you move to Florida?
I moved to Florida in 2016.
What brought you down here?
The military, I had some mental issues in the military, so they said I need to be somewhere temperate weather, so I said Florida it is.
Okay. And did you chose this area specifically? You already knew people here?
Kind of fell into it. Yeah, lucky.
Okay. Then talk to me about, obviously we got a humidor behind us, talk to us about cigar lounge business, and what got you interested in being a part of this project?
I like cigars and I like whiskey.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's what got me into the business. cigar humidor, and we carry great cigars. They're all high-end cigars for the most part. We have a few cheaper cigars, but it doesn't make them mean they're bad. They're just lower price. The business as a whole is the one business in the world that can bring a millionaire, as someone who strokes a check to the IRS for $1 million, and someone who gets an IRS refund to the same table.
Sorry, say that again.
So someone who has to stroke a check to the $1 million to the IRS, he makes that much money a year. And someone who gets a rebate back because he doesn't make that much money a year.
Gotcha. So you're saying that this business brings the both types of people.
Exactly. And they both will sit at the same table and smoke a cigar together. Anxiety, he strokes $1 million check every year. Man, I'm getting an IRS refund.
Talk to me about the direction you view. So obviously we have so many problems around the world. And we're talking about the issue of war and masculinity. And you know, Russia, China, these places, they kind of don't play around when it comes to masculinity, feminine. They got two separate gender roles. They got very basic things that they're not distracted by their societies. Right. However, like you said, American military does have a certain power to it that still is not going away anytime soon. So domestically on the inside, we know foreign-wise, we got, what, over 800 military bases, something like that? Crazy amount.
You got a crazy amount. It's not 800. I know it's a lot.
Okay. Well, for sure, we got at least one in every.
Oh, we got one in every country,
yeah.
almost every country throughout the world, at least one. If not, we have an embassy there that has Marines on it and a strike force that's willing to go to that embassy.
And probably a naval base not too far, like a naval, what is it called, the cruise, the big ships.
Yeah. I said a strike force.
Okay.
That's what I meant, a Navy strike force. So the Navy strike force consists of an aircraft carrier and eight battleships and cruisers.
Okay.
And I don't ask me what those all are because I wasn't in the Navy. I just happen to know that fact.
Okay, I got a question, but I'll ask you towards the end. Okay, what is in the direction that you think American society... Sorry, what direction do you think American society should move towards to or will move towards to? And then what are 2 to 3 different steps you think we'll need in order to get there?
So we're going politics right for a second right now. So what I think we should start doing is voting with our wallet.
Okay.
Rather than voting with our feelings. Because feelings don't matter.
Mm.
They don't. I can hurt your feelings all day long, Zaid.
I don't have feelings.
Yeah, neither do I. but the reality is, it's how much money you're willing to spend here. How much money am I willing to spend on you? That kind of thing. That's what makes the world go round. Capitalism.
So when you mean voting with our wallets, you mean in terms of which businesses we support, which people we support, which cities we support, that sort of thing.
When politicians are voting and they're going to promise to support small business and they showed on their track record they support small business, I'm voting for them all day long.
Right. Show me the money. Show me what if
show me
what
your
have
money.
You done. What are the actual things that if you've done, right? Not so much of false promises.
Mm-hmm. I don't care about government handouts. Not at all. I want you to help my business. I want you to help other people's businesses. I want you to help the working man.
Because I feel like when you said, again, going back to the working man, when the working man... makes good money, right? He can go out and make a good living.
Yep.
And he has enough money for that. He can support his kids. He can support his whole household under one income.
He can buy more cigars.
He can buy more cigars.
Exactly.
Right? But his whole household under one income means his wife gets to be a beautiful woman that gets to look after those kids.
And that way she can go get her nails done if she wants to, get her pedicure, her panties, all that.
Right.
Good stuff.
And those kids get to be raised under the advice of the strong father, but also under the love and support of their mother.
So the tutelage of the mother and the advice of the father.
Right. They don't have to be raised in a school constantly. And
exactly.
Daycare and babysitters and be under the supervision,
yeah.
Almost like the being some sort of like propaganda, right? Coming from the public school system,
yeah.
Whoever they're around. So if they don't get mom and dad on the same team raising them, but they don't have that because they're too busy working, then they're going to get brainwashed by whatever phones they're attached to, whatever friends they're attached to, whatever games they're playing, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
That sort of thing. Entertainment that they're watching nowadays.
I have 3 kids. I have a stepson and 2 children.
Right.
That are mine. That I claim all 3 of them all day long, every day. My stepson goes to an IB public school. I'm not going to say the name of it, but he's been punched twice there.
Wow.
He didn't fight back because we told him not to fight back. I'm changing that because I don't want him to get kicked out. But on the same note, I don't want him to stand up for himself.
Right.
And girls go to a private school. Those issues never happen there.
Gotcha.
They go to a Christian school because they want to raise in a Christian education.
Mm-hmm.
Son, I want him raised in a very academic education so that he...
I mean, no public schools could have an IB program. I thought that was only designated for high school.
Elementary schools have them now.
Wow. So again, going back to the whole, because you know Daniel Craig that plays James Bond.
Yeah.
He once said that if your kid punches my kid is raised to punch your kid back.
And that's how we're kind of, the only reason I haven't pushed that script is because I don't want him to get kicked out of an Ivy school.
Gotcha.
That's the only reason I haven't.
But the other kid didn't get in trouble, didn't get kicked out.
Interesting. We're fighting that right now.
Yeah. Because I've been into a fight that I didn't start, but they still suspended me.
Yeah.
For like a day, and the other kid got suspended for like 3 days. Because they know I didn't start it. They looked at my record that I was a good kid the entire time. I got
and that's what I'm going to tell him. I'm like, dude, you get suspended for a day, I don't care.
Yeah. I was more afraid of my parents.
Thank you for ice cream.
I was more afraid of my parents than I was afraid of like the school or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought they would get pissed, but they were more concerned for me. Like, we know you didn't start this.
All day long. Yeah. I'm concerned about my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to ask you who, I'm going to, first question I ask is who started it.
Right.
If you didn't start it, you better not, you better finish it.
Yeah.
Even if you lose, you better finish it.
Because it's like what you were saying about General Mad Dog, about being polite, being professional, right? Being a gentleman. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean you're soft. That doesn't mean you could just be walked on over.
No.
You are ready to whack somebody. If you protect your family, protect yourself. But you're not going to carry with that energy. Because I've always felt sometimes, granted, growing up, I didn't have many American friends. What I mean by that, I didn't have many white friends. Probably until I was like high school.
Racist.
The first white kid to come over to my house, I was probably like 16, 17.
Yeah.
And then after that, as an adult, I was like, man, most of these Americans are full of crap. But the ones that were honest, that were courteous, that were respectful, that were overall people I could get along with and fuck around with, because I'm a very, you know, obviously that was the name of the show, unfiltered, were usually military. We're usually vets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those were usually the folks that I got along with well, that I could have honest conversations with.
Because they don't care.
And they were ready to, they were super nice, super friendly with me, but they were always ready to throw down if need be. You can take that if you want to.
All right, let me tell you real quick.
Okay. So a lot of them, they had that ability. And again, some of the toughest people growing up, not just vets, but just generally some of the toughest people that I would be afraid to get in a fight with were never the type of people that were hostile with. They didn't carry themselves with that energy. I knew they could, but they were never like that. No. Now, a lot of times, some of the most insecure people, some of the most people that are kind of looking for that problem, they carry themselves a bit more hostile. They're the ones looking at you, like, looking for a fight. But the ones that can throw down and that will throw down and have the biggest power to do so, they're not looking for it. They don't want it because you know what problems it could bring. It's not worth it.
It's not.
There's so many little things into a street fight that could happen. You don't know.
I love Texas's law.
Too.
If you go in front of a cop and say, we're declaring Mortal Kombat.
I know what you're talking about.
You can fight. No weapons allowed.
Right, right.
But you can fight. And right in front of the cop.
Now, something I heard suggested was bringing back dueling. Meaning if you was talking shit about me, and I confront you about it, we go outside and we throw down a little boxing match.
I'm down with that. That's Mortal Kombat.
And if you don't say yes to it, that means you gotta stop talking shit about me.
Yeah.
You cannot just beseech my name, you know what I mean? Like, ruin my credibility with everybody,
Texas.
Spreading false rumors and lies and whatnot. Because back in the day, if I heard you talking shit, I'd pull up to the bar and be like, let's go outside, and then boom, you're about the pistols.
No pistols, just fight.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays, obviously. I think Andrew Jackson was one of, was in a few.
Andrew Jackson has no. What's his name?
Is it Jackson?
No, I'm thinking of his name. Give me one second. He's named, what's the boxer? Cassius Clay.
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali. Cassius Clay was the original name.
Yeah.
He was named after,
Oh, you're talking about the OG Cassius Clay?
Yeah.
The video that you sent me?
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I remember now.
He's an abolitionist.
Yeah.
He has the highest number of duels with pistols of anyone on record.
I don't remember that. That's insane. Oh, shoot. Yeah, I think duels, like you said, in a boxing sense, you know what I mean?
That you know dueling was an Olympic sport at one time?
Oh, that's sick.
You can fact check me on that one, people. It was pistol duels in the early Olympics was actually, they would wear cloth, have powder guns and low energy guns, and they would duel. And that was an Olympic sport.
Huh. Now, obviously, I'm going to assume you like guns.
I do like guns.
What is a go-to, let's say, for a non-military experience, maybe somebody that didn't grow up around a lot of guns, but they're kind of interested in the terms of home protection and self-protection. What is something you would recommend for somebody to have in their house for their family?
Not for your house, for your family, but to start off with the Ruger 10/22 rifle. Gets you comfortable with the rifle. It's a 22. It's a low-caliber gun. It has no kick whatsoever.
Okay.
It's a great way to go and learning how to shoot.
Okay.
Home defense, though, shotgun all day long. Spray and pray.
Right. Something that the wife could use if the husband's not home.
Exactly. Husband. It's one of those guns that it's...
Any shotguns in particular?
No, I like Mossberg. It's just...
Okay.
inexpensive. You don't have to buy a Benelli M4, $2,000 shotgun.
Gotcha.
Something that you just go click clack, and the intruders hear that.
Yeah,
they know.
Right.
That's a sound you don't forget.
Right.
That's the reason I don't keep around in the chamber, so you hear the click clack.
Yeah.
Before I got a room sweeper, it's a short barrel shotgun. It's considered a pistol.
Okay.
And it's a made by Mossberg.
Okay.
And it's cost me about $500. And it, you hear that click clack, you know what's going on.
Right.
It's more about to whom it may concern rather than my name, the bullet with your name on it.
Makes sense, because it's going to go, it's going to spray in the direction.
It's going to spray out.
Yeah. Now, shotgun, anything else you would recommend?
I like pistols.
Yeah.
Pistols are easier to use. Rifles, you have to move around rooms with them and things like that. They're a little bit more difficult.
Would you recommend an AR-15 for the house?
Not for the house, because that bullet can go through the wall and hit your neighbor. The reason, that's one of the reasons. The other reason is, unless you're trained with an AR-15, it's very hard to sweep around rooms with it.
Okay. And in terms of pistols, what pistols would you recommend?
I love 6-Hour. That's my brand.
Yep.
Glock's a great brand, too. The only problem with Glocks is the way their pistol grips are done is once you hold a Glock and shoot with the Glock, you can only use Glocks. Your body comes conditioned to them.
Interesting. I have a Glock.
That's a great gun.
But when I did hold a friend's 6-Hour, that one felt
weird, didn't it?
A Glock felt almost like a toy, in a way.
Yeah, because it's made in plastic.
Yeah. But when I held the 6-Hour, when I held the 6-Hour, I was like, yo, this feels like a gun.
Yeah.
Especially like when you yank it back, metal and everything, how it feels, it's definitely smoother.
Yeah.
Something about it that's a bit more robust.
It's a little bit more robust, but still, the Glock's a great gun and it holds just the same magazine capacity as a 6-Hour.
But it's got no safety. For a lot of beginners, that's something.
None of them have safety. Yeah. 6-Hours don't have safeties. Glock's don't have safeties. You can get a 6-Hour with the safety on it.
Okay.
The only thing is just don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to shoot it.
Right, which is...
And then you have a holster. The holster covers the trigger. So
yeah.
It covers the trigger, so you're good.
Right. Now, are you one in the chamber or not in the chamber?
One in the chamber.
One is always.
Always one in the chamber.
Gotcha. Because of the no safety, obviously it's in a holster, I still choose not to have one in the chamber because I'm not that experienced.
And that's fine with you.
Yeah.
That's what you want to
but
do.
But
the hard part theoretically, you're pulling out, then you're chambering around, and then you're aiming.
With you on one in the chamber.
Yeah.
I am, theoretically, I do believe it's better to have one in the chamber.
I need to get you on the range. I need to get you on the range. That's what it comes down to. I just need you to put some rounds down range.
It
makes you more comfortable.
It makes more sense.
More on the draw. That's what it is.
It makes more sense. Because here's the thing. You can practice. Most people are going to practice and shoot, right? But they're not going
to
practice
taking it out.
And pulling it back and
yeah.
shooting. Because when it does happen in a heightened situation, that split second, for you to remember to do that, and what if you mess up for 2 seconds? You know what I mean? And then here's the thing that people don't realize. I don't know how my muscles and my blood flow is going to be in that adrenaline and that anxiety, that situation. I'm pulling it back. And what if I don't pull it all the way back?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Better to already have it. Just whip out and bam, you're ready to go.
So the way you can practice is just drawing off the table. You don't even have to draw up a holster.
Right.
You just draw off the table, figure off the trigger.
Yeah.
Just practice pulling it up, pulling it up,
yeah.
pulling up. See how my finger is?
Mm-hmm.
It's off the trigger. If you start pulling like this, you're going to shoot yourself.
Right. Got you. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Did you grow up shooting guns in Tennessee?
I did. My grandfather took me out a lot and practiced with me.
Got you. See, that's one of the things I hear a lot of people talking about. Oh, my God. It's so dangerous and kids. If you're raising your kids in a retarded way, but if you take them out to the country and you show them, like I said, this is a dangerous tool, but if you use it properly, it's fun and it can help protect you in the future.
I have taken my gun out, holstered, left the holster on the table. My daughter saw it one time, berated me. What are you doing, Dad? You know not to leave a gun out. I'm sorry. You're right. My bad. And it's not that I was away from the gun, because I wasn't. I was right next to it.
Right.
But I didn't have it put away, locked away safely. And just the fact that I didn't immediately put it away, she got onto me. And I was very proud of her for doing that. It shows that she knows gun safety and with the gun.
Right. Now, me, because I don't live with kids, my gun is really pretty visible. It's an accessible place. It's not locked up.
Right.
It's on the table. It's by the bed. It's somewhere where I could get it.
Well, mine's where I can access it easily. It's not locked in a...
That one is
not locked
up. If everything is locked up and somebody breaks
it,
you can't get to it. What's the point of having it?
That's the only gun that's not locked up is that one.
Gotcha.
But it's still put away in a safe area where the kids can't get to it.
Gotcha. Have you ever seen a comedian Jim Jeffries?
No.
Oh, okay. He has a special called Free Dumb, like the word dump.
D-O-N, yeah.
And he did a whole special in Tennessee, actually. And the reason he's like, oh, I chose Tennessee to roast y'all because I could have chosen any liberal city and they would have laughed. But I chose to be in the heat of hostile territory and talk about guns. So it was just like his Australian perspective on it. I'll send it to you later for you to check out.
Yeah, Australians hate guns.
Yeah. But they had like one mass shooting in the 90s and they banned all of them, which I thought was kind of dumb.
A little bit strange.
Because you know what's interesting? They say like Europe is hard to get guns, right?
Yeah.
I had close people that I knew that had a handgun and an assault rifle. And I was like,
sure, define assault rifle.
I'm sorry?
Define assault rifle.
It was, no, I'm sorry, not assault rifle, shotgun.
No. But still, define assault rifle for me.
For me, an assault rifle is any rifle that's like long with a mag.
So the true definition of assault rifle is any weapon that can fire more than 3 rounds at a time, 3 round burst.
Interesting.
So every AR-15 is not it.
Because that's because it's single.
Single shot.
Interesting. So it's got to be a minimum 3 rounds, like the M16.
Exactly.
Got you.
M4, M16. M14s, things like that.
Okay. Well, the fact that this dude wasn't affiliated with gangs, the fact that he wasn't extremely wealthy either, the fact that he wasn't a criminal and still got access to a pistol, 9mm, showed me, in Europe, showed me, it's like, okay, it is not that hard to get it. And I was so surprised. I'm like, bro, I thought only in America. It's like, literally, like, what are you talking about? It's like, anywhere around the world.
What country is he in?
This was in Spain. Nice. It's like any country. Now, granted, it wasn't through legal means. It's super hard. You can't get handguns. UK banned handguns, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
The cops in the UK don't even have guns. They got to call a special force to come in with weapons.
They sure do.
Which to me is like dumb as hell because you got people with machetes going around stabbing people all over the UK. And it's like, nah.
You have a billy club. Good job.
Lay down some bullets and people will know real quick not to stab.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The country El Salvador is super safe now. I don't know if you're familiar with the MS-13 game.
Yes, I am very familiar with them.
He put them in super intense prisons under super harsh conditions, filmed it, and it's broadcasted every day so the citizens can see this is what happens when you behave this type of way. And to me, what I like about that is, like you're saying about violence, you cannot stop violent people from committing violence. You cannot stop criminals from committing crime. Yep. You cannot stop criminals from having guns. To limit the average good people from protecting themselves when law enforcement and whatnot is already limited resources, you're putting your society at a disadvantage.
Exactly. Mate, I will give up my guns the day they give the criminal, make the criminals give up their guns.
Which you can't.
Exactly.
Makes sense. But again, it goes back to the idea of if you won't do it, you're going to call somebody else to do it anyway. You're going to call the cops and they're going to bring guns.
In reality, I wouldn't do that anyways. And here's why. The Second Amendment was not written specifically to protect yourself from other people.
Mm-hmm.
It was to protect yourself from the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Second Amendment was written.
Right.
The byproduct is definitely protect yourself from other people.
Right. Because you don't know other people.
Exactly.
Because back in the day, everybody knew each other by name and by face because it was so small. We're talking about a few colonies, a few people and whatnot. You know, they weren't expecting this country to be as populated and as big as it is today.
Yeah.
That's something I've always noticed that I'm like, okay, tyrannical government. The problem with that is, technically speaking, if I'm not mistaken, by the Second Amendment, to defend yourself against a tyrannical government, it means that back in the day, what did the government have? Muskets. What did people have? Muskets. So to protect yourself against the government, you got to be able to have whatever the government has.
Correct.
Technically speaking, if they got tanks, we should be able to have tanks.
Ask me how Second Amendment I am.
Yeah.
Ask me. How Second Amendment are you, Charlie?
We should have tanks.
Yeah, we should have tanks. We have tanks, your name.
What's the point of having M16s and a few AR-15s? The government can bring all these drones and all this Air Force planes and whatnot. And you know what I mean? It's like, okay, so we really can't protect ourselves against a tyrannical government, technically.
No. I mean, we can. I mean, look at Afghanistan. Look at Iraq.
Yeah.
They didn't have all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, and they still
held them.
They still held them. But those are a different type of people. That's a different breed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've always said that mountain people can't be fucked with.
No.
If you look at even, like, parts of certain countries that want to separate, like Catalonia and in the Basque country in Spain, those are mountainous regions that have always wanted to separate from Spain. France has the same thing in the south. You take a look at, for example, Afghanistan, Iran, the Kashmir region, right? There's all contested territories and whatnot, all mountainous regions.
Right.
It's really hard. Look at Sicily, for example. It's been mafia run for so long, mountainous region. Some of the biggest parts where the cartels come from in Mexico, all mountainous regions. Now, coastal people, like Florida, right? Chill people, really, you know, easily to be messed with. But mountain people, different type of breed.
Yeah.
I would say Florida's an exception when it comes to coastal people. Because I always said, if China or North Korea or whoever wanted to invade this country and landed in Texas and Florida would make the biggest mistake of their lives by doing that. I mean, we're here in Apollo Beach. Imagine you see a couple of North Koreans hopping off some bus, you know what I mean? People would come in flip-flops and freaking, what are they called? Not the RVs. dang it. What's those little things that old people drive on the golf carts. Yeah. It'd pull up in golf carts that slide and start shooting them off. You know what I mean? It's like, it'd be a huge mistake to try to take
this. Oh, yeah.
Now, California, yeah, you can take that.
You can have it.
They're going to throw up a
We'll give it to you.
By all means.
Washington State, take it.
Oregon can go to.
Yeah. You have it. In fact, I'm making a good deal on it. I'm making a good deal right now. $20.
It's Alaska was sold really cheap, too.
It was.
I don't think, yeah, the Russians knew that it was valued.
No.
I think they just said, fuck it, here. Talk to me about your faith, what it means to you to be a Christian, and what you see religion and Christianity as a whole in terms of what it is today and where you would like it to be in the future.
So Christianity as a whole, that's a tough topic.
Yeah.
First of all, Jesus Christ is our Lord and Savior.
Mm-hmm.
He came down, his father sent him down to earth to basically die on the cross for us so that our sins can be forgiven. That's the bottom line up front. Christianity as a whole today has gotten away from, has not as a whole, people who claim to be Christians versus are Christians have gotten away from the basic that everyone thinks Christianity is about love.
Mm-hmm.
God was very violent. There was a flood. There is,
yeah.
I mean, he wiped out the entire world.
Historically, there was a lot of messed up things.
There's a lot of,
you look at the Bible, the Old Testament.
Yeah, right? The Old Testament specifically, sacrificial lambs.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a, hey, I love everybody.
Right.
It's not. It's follow God's word or you're out. And that's what Christianity is not doing today. It's becoming
being too tolerant of everything.
Too tolerant of everything.
Yeah.
You look at the Methodist Church and how they've become. They're very open to sin. Transgenderism, lesbian, gay, things like that that are known sins in the Bible are very tolerant in the Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And the Catholic Church too. You got pedophiles in the Catholic Church and things like that. Nothing happened to those preachers.
Right.
So that's kind of the issue I have with people claiming to be Christians versus who are Christians.
Gotcha. So how do you become, I don't want to use the word intolerant, but plain and simple, if you are tolerant to everything, you no longer have a definition of everything. You no longer have any structure. You no longer have an idea of what you are because you've accepted everything. So how do you go back to that? How do you get Christians to care more?
It's one thing to love someone and hate the sin. You love the person, but hate the sin.
Right.
All day long. That's the thing that you got to do. That's how you have to get back to it, is you have to understand what sin is, and you can't tolerate it.
Right. So how important is your faith for you in your personal life, in your daily life?
I'm at church every Sunday. I'm starting in, well, I'm not trying to brag about this by any means, but the church is doing a fast, 7-day fast, to get closer to God.
Okay.
I'm joining that fast.
Nice.
So it's very much
part of my life. It's like a prequel to you doing your first Ramadan, hopefully. You did it when you were overseas in Iraq?
A Ramadan? No. I did not do a Ramadan. But fasting is very, because what you're supposed to do is when you feel the hunger pains, it's supposed to remind you to pray to God.
Yeah. I think it's also supposed to, there's another thing about fasting, two components, at least from what I learned from doing Ramadan as a kid, was one, you get to feel for what less fortunate to go through.
Correct.
And that makes you more grateful towards the blessings that God gives. And another thing I always noticed, when you are controlling and monitoring what goes in your mouth, you're kind of controlling and monitoring what goes in your brain. Something about fasting, your thoughts and everything become slower and more controlled and more reasonable. You start to filter things in a different way. You start to sort of think about things in a different light.
Right. You threw me a curveball there. I always expect to talk religion this way. But yeah.
No, because we cannot talk about patriotism and love of country and love of family without talking about love of God. Because I feel like they're all connected.
They are connected.
Yeah.
God, there is only one God. He's built in the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
The Holy Spirit comes into you and helps you discern what you need to do daily. God's our Father. He teaches you. And then His Son set the example for how we should live.
Now, what are some key points about Christians overall? Or how can I say this? What are certain things about being a Christian that maybe non-Christian folk, particularly Muslims, might not understand about the faith and overall things that you guys do in the church?
Well, there's a lot of similarities between the Muslim faith and Christianity. The biggest difference is we believe that they're in the Holy Trinity and that we are descendants of Abraham, which you also believe you're saying, but you all have come from Ishmael. And we believe we're from Isaac, Israel, and the Jewish Israelis.
Right, the Jews come from Isaac, yeah. Right, and we come from Ishmael.
Yep. Yeah. So with all that said, we believe, without trying to step on your toes.
No, by all means.
That we're the one true faith because we're ordained by God in that way.
Okay. Muslims believe what's interesting with the Islamic faith is that they see the Torah to Moses and they see the teachings of Jesus as sort of prequels to the final book being the Quran. So they don't negate what was before, but they use that as the basically saying that those were stepping stones to a final version. What I've noticed similar, however, is that generally speaking, whether you're a traditional Jew or a traditional Christian or a traditional Muslim, if you follow some sort of level of conservatism and traditional faith and respect for God, you generally tend to be the type of person who has discipline.
Yes.
You don't get drunk.
I agree with that.
You don't really gamble too much. You monitor yourself in a way where you have discipline in terms of how you carry yourself, how you respect other people. You sort of follow a simple line, a simple framework for navigating. The specifics, the details might change a little bit.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you need to pray. It's good to fast once in a while. You know, certain things that it's good to do to remain close to God. Because I feel like that's what's missing. It's not necessarily the religion itself, but the idea of having a relationship to God and having some sort of connection to God is what's sort of missing. Because people might pray. They might follow the Islamic faith or the Christian faith, but they might be doing it simply because out of cultural norms and expectations within their society. They might not do it out of actual understanding and love and appreciation for why. Because I've always said, when with Muslims, for example, that want to fast and not drink, God is telling you not to drink, but he doesn't benefit whether you do or don't. He's not affected. This is for you to do. This is good for you to practice, right? So it's the almost like setting a standard for yourself. When you have a high standard for yourself and you respect yourself, okay, I'm not going to intoxicate too much the body that God gave me. I'm not going to ruin the body that God gave me. You know what I mean? So that sort of appreciation, I think, is what's missing, not necessarily the specific religion in which you follow.
Right. And I'll agree with that. But the biggest difference between Christian faith and those other three that you mentioned is there's only one pathway to heaven in the Christian faith.
Okay.
And the only pathway to that is through Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior.
So my question is, with among Christians, is it believed that if you spend your whole life committing sin, but at the end you say that Jesus is Lord and Savior, you get to enter heaven?
It's a cop-out.
Okay.
To a certain extent, in my opinion, and that might be the wrong word to use, but yes.
Okay.
As long as you have accepted Christ as your Lord and Savior, and you live that, and you will go to heaven.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that your treasures are in heaven. So God also says
you might get sent to
there's no purgatory, but you build your treasures in heaven. You're going to be more blessed in heaven.
It's almost like when you download an app and you get the free version and you're trying to use all the benefits, like you got to pay for the pro version.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's actually a good way to say
it. Or like a club where you're like hanging out with the normal people. Like, yo, this is a VIP that you don't get to get into.
Exactly.
You can enjoy the normal part of it. There's a VIP upstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So then is Jesus your favorite prophet nationally?
Well, he's not a prophet. He's the Savior.
So you guys, you won't call him a prophet then?
No, he's God.
Okay, that's interesting. So then...
So my favorite prophet would probably be... He's more of a disciple, but I like Matthew a lot.
Okay. And prophets, you don't have a favorite one?
Prophets? Let me think of the prophets that are in the Old Testament. Samuel. Or actually, no. I like Samson a lot.
Really?
I like Samson because of his strength. God blessed him with his strength and things like that. And he gave his own life to... because after he sinned, he realized what he did, and he gave his life to avenge what God had told him to do.
Okay. I always liked Moses.
Moses is a great one.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of him. I don't know why he didn't make my top two list. Yeah. Moses is awesome.
Splitting the Red Sea, some gangster
stuff. That is gangster. He also, when they were fighting a battle, what was the battle? I can't remember the name of the battle, but he held the staff up. It had his two sons hold the staff up too.
That was Moses?
That was Moses.
I got to read the Bible.
I got to read the Bible more.
Bible has bars. I tell people all the time. There's certain sections of the Bible that I've read through and looked at. I'm like, yo, that's poetic. That's nice.
It is.
And a lot of people don't realize this, but there is Arabic is a very poetic language.
It is.
And the way the Quran was written is that it has a poetic nature to it, because I used to sometimes worry about forgetting certain lines from my teacher. Mm-hmm. And she would tell me, don't worry about it. Because of the nature of this written, it's so poetic, it's designed for you to be able to remember, for you to keep it attained. And what I've noticed is, if you look at, like in the church, you might sing the certain hymns amongst traditional faiths that I feel like musically it makes sense because a lot of things were passed down in oral history, right? You were teaching these people in a song, in a hymn, in a fable, in a myth, in a way for them to understand. Have you ever heard of the author Reza Aslan?
No, I haven't.
He was born in Iran, came to California, I think back in the 70s or 80s, as a kid. So because of the Muslim discrimination, his mother converted the entire family to Christianity, and then he eventually went back to being Muslim. But he married a Christian woman, and he always said that her family taught him more about Jesus than any book because of how much they invoked so much values and principles. But the one thing that he studied was not just theology. He studied literature, creative writing, how things are written. So he said, I don't know if I told you this before, but he was talking about, if I wanted to say Charlie was a great guy, how do we communicate that in the modern day? We would say Charlie's a great guy. But 1,000 years ago, they wouldn't say that. They would come up with a story. They would say Charlie was walking down the street. He saw a homeless man with no shirt, and he gave up his own shirt so the homeless man wouldn't be cold. The story literally didn't happen, but its meaning is true.
Exactly.
And that's the difference between, take the Constitution, for example. We still have arguments. Do we take this literally and apply this in a literal context?
We did.
Or do we take this metaphorically and theoretically and apply it in a general context? Sometimes it's both. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other. And
it's always literal in the Bible. But some things that when Jesus tells the story of the shepherd, mm-hmm. when he goes out and gets his lamb, though he goes and leaves his one lamb, leaves his entire flock to find the one lamb, breaks his legs and brings him back.
Right.
That's a metaphor.
Okay.
For the Christian faith, that God will always be there and will leave the entire flock to tend to itself and know it'll be fine, and know that all the Christians will be fine taking care of themselves to go find the one stray lamb and bring him back to the flock.
Got you. So then, take Jesus walking on water, for example. Do you think that's a literal story, or do you think that has a certain type of implication?
I think it's a literal story.
Okay.
I think he was God. He could walk on water.
Okay. No, it was just something that's interesting that I feel like sometimes we might go back and forth and battle on in terms of what to take literally and what to take metaphorically. But a lot of times there's hidden meanings in certain things that we need to apply.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I always feel like at the end of the day, you and I are critical thinkers, right? Yep. You serve in the military. You got to think of strategy. You got to be logical about certain things.
Right.
Why only use those skills outside of religion? Why not apply them to religion, right? Because if I'm not mistaken, in the Bible is a story, something about when that the devil told Jesus, if you want people to follow you, you need mystery, you need authority.
Oh, talking about when he was in the desert?
Yes.
When Jesus was in the desert?
You need mystery, you need authority, and you need fear. And Jesus was like, no, I want people whoever to follow me to actually want to follow. I don't need to figure out a way to manipulate them into doing it. I want a true follower to be a true follower.
The devil's, and this isn't biblical, but this is a saying, the devil's best trick was to prove that he was convincing people he doesn't exist.
So those are certain things that I've always looked at in terms of being your raw, honest form and being genuine. Yes, certain people won't like it, but the ones that do like it will really like it. That's what you want. You want to know that the love and support that you receive is genuine love and support. I feel like that's what Jesus was looking for in terms of bringing in followers and trying to educate people. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because again, if you have ever read the Grand Inquisitor and the Brothers Komarov, it's a Russian book, and it's a story basically during the Spanish Inquisition and how Jesus comes back in that story and he gets imprisoned. And the Grand Inquisitor tells Jesus, like, you don't need you. We haven't needed you. And this story is kind of like dissing the Catholic Church for basically saying, y'all use what the devil told Jesus to use. Mystery, fear, and authority to control people. You don't actually look for genuine followers and try to follow Jesus' teachings. You're doing the opposite. You're trying to coerce people. Well, not coerce, but you're trying to influence people through mystery, fear, and authority in order to basically give their will to you. Because the difference between me willingly wanting to support you and follow you, because at the end of the day, every relationship revolves around a follower and a leader. You know what I mean? There's an employer, there's an employee, there's a government, there's a citizen, there's a man, there's a woman, there's somebody following. I always say it's pimp and hoe, but it depends on the context you want to put it in. Every relationship is one way or the other, but there are better leaders than others.
Yep.
You know, there are leaders that want to see that follower grow and excel, and there are leaders that want to exploit.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? For their own beneficial gain. But I feel like in life now, it can be win-win.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? You can hire somebody and they could do well in your business and you can benefit from it. It's win. Exactly. You can have a beautiful woman that you care about and she cares about you. It's win. It doesn't have to be a win-lose situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. So is there any questions you have for me? I feel like we've touched on all the major things that I wanted to touch on.
Let's do the rap session.
Yeah. No questions? All right, I'm just gonna do a few rapid fire questions. Beer or pizza or chocolate ice cream or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Okay. Chevy or Ford?
Ooh, I like so Chevy.
Okay. Mexico or Canada?
Mexico. Cold.
Cowboy hats or baseball caps?
Cowboy hats.
Jeans or khakis?
Jeans.
I saw that one coming.
Yeah.
And final one, beach or mountains?
That's a tough one, actually. Because they both have their pros. Beaches, though, because mountains are cold.
Sounds good, then. All right.
Appreciate you. Thank you.